Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Cathro Gray Mission. I'm your host, Adam Ferens, and tonight the topic of discussion is the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, or is it The Adventures of Young Indiana Jones, a series that ran on ABC from 92 until, well, we'll get to that later. It had quite a fitful existence. Kind of found a little bit of new life on physical home media, but we'll also get to that later. Joining me tonight is Aaron White. So, Aaron, say hello.
Hello.
Yeah, so, you know, Indiana Jones, of course, is one of the most famous movie series of all time. I'm not sure how much we need to really go into that. This, however, is the story of how Indiana Jones became Indiana Jones. It has two timelines, one where Indy is about 9 to 11 years old, maybe I'd say 9 to 12, and then another one where he's about 16 to 20, 21, and it follows him. That part does follow him through his adventures in World War I and right after as he enters college. The earlier one shows him going on a world book tour with his father, his mother, and a character that we'd never heard of before, who was his governess slash tutor, who had been his father's instructor at university. It's got a lot of good stuff in it. It's got a lot of good ideas in it. But as you and I discussed leading up to this, not all of it works. let's start with, before we get to the show itself, I think some of the most interesting stuff about the show may actually be stuff surrounding the show. So in terms of the research that you did for the show, you know, we were discussing just before we went on air what George Lucas wanted to do with this series in terms of making it more than just edutainment. And what was it that you were talking about that you want to share with the listeners?
At least by the time that the DVDs were coming out, which was too late for whatever that's worth. When you put out a DVD in 2008 for a series that really hasn't found new life since 1996, it's too late. But that being said, he kind of envisioned it as being a tool to use in high school history classes. You would show the two-part episode because on the DVDs, they're all two-part episodes, mini-movies of sorts. I guess they're features.
Basically.
And, yeah, kind of anthology features with two stories each. And then showing a documentary or two about the actual historical events or figures that were contained in that episode. And he thought that that would be a kind of light and fun way for high school history teachers to teach about 20th century history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I remember when the show came out and reading all these articles and what Lucas had wanted to do, and he talked about how they were preparing these documentaries that he wanted to make available eventually, and these were some of the documentaries that eventually got made and put onto the DVD sets. The DVD sets have some really wonderful documentaries. Not all documentaries are created equal, but some are really good. Some are honestly better than the episodes. But, you know, the thing about the show is, we talked about this right here. This is a show that had a really tortured history in terms of it's not only its broadcast, but its production. They shot for months and months and months. They shot for like 16, 18 months, making what became essentially the first two seasons of the show. Now, this was a show, it began in March of 92, and it last aired in 1996. It started on ABC and ended on the Family Channel. it did that because of a series of TV films. The first six episodes aired got really sporadic airing because of news things. There was the election, the 92 election. I think one of the things that interrupted it, if I remember right, was one of H. Ross Perot's infomercials, political infomercials.
Oh, let's not forget Rodney King.
Well, there was that, but I think because it ended in April of 92, it ended in early April, and King came around in late April of 92. But what I was getting to next, but some of the trial definitely affected it. It started again in September of 92 and didn't end until late July of 93. Now, the typical TV season is September or October until April or May, sometimes June. The reason that they had it in July is they took it off after about maybe I'm going to look at it just to make sure I don't send anybody wrong. They ran it September, then October, and then so you had four episodes, and then it didn't come back until flipping March. So that means it was gone from October 12th until March 13th. So that's October, November, December, January, February, March. It was off air for 5 months. It actually came back to its third largest audience of all time. They announced that they were, quote, burning off the episodes. Now, they didn't burn off all the episodes. They still had four episodes that were unaired, that didn't get seen until the DVDs and the VHS sets. Those were there was one episode with a child Indy, which was Florence, May 1908, where he and his mother meet Giacomo Puccini. There was Prague, 1917, where Indy meets Franz Kafka. Palestine, October 7, 1917, where he meets Lawrence and goes to the city of Beersheba to capture it. And then an episode where he meets Dracula. Yes, folks, he meets Dracula. These are the four episodes they didn't air. And then, a year later, they aired one about him in Hollywood, one with him going with his friend Remy to search for a diamond, one where he gets involved with some aerial antics in the war, and then finally one where it's him both as a teenager and a boy with his father. However, this leads me into the next thing. Now, did you ever go, Aaron, and watch any of the old indie bookends that I mentioned exist? Did you ever get a chance to look at any of those?
I've seen like two or three of them. I didn't watch through them all.
Yeah. Because, and I don't want to do too much here without discussing this. But, yeah, as we can tell, the show was all over the place, and that's part of the problem. Look, I like the show more than you do, but I think it had some real issues, not least of which is how it was shown and how it was presented. Now, one thing that they did do is when they took it from the TV airings to home media, they cut out the old indie bookends. Now, these old indie bookends were like a 93-year-old indie who would come along, start telling a story. The episode would be the story, and then there'd be something at the end, either something funny or something serious.
It was a framing device.
Yeah, it was a framing device. It was a framing device that sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. Usually they were just kind of pointless. There were one or two framing devices that I thought were really, really nice. There were one or two that I actually thought were funny, but the majority of them were not any good, and that's despite George Hall being wonderful as a very old indie. George Lucas decided to get rid of these, partially because he realized that they were pointless, partially because he realized that he wanted to do other things with Indy as a character, and the family that he'd given Indy for these bookends. Oh, yeah, Indy had a family. He had a daughter and a grandson named Spike with a garage band. yeah, guys and gals and everybody else, that's exactly what we were looking at. It was the 90s. What can I say? But they took these episodes and they made it chronological. And they did little 1 to 2 minute bridging work, which means they were bringing back Corey Carrier, who, when they did the bridging material, was no longer 11, but now 14 or 15. And Sean Patrick Flannery had already, you know, noticeably aged into someone that was definitely fully in his 20s. So it looks a little awkward. Some of them, you know, you can squint and see, yeah, it's okay. Some of them don't. So what do you think of some of that? How much of that was noticeable for you?
You know, the age of the actor playing Indiana Jones was usually the least of my concern. There was, in the episode you mentioned that wasn't aired, where young Indy and his mom, or is it young Indy and his dad? Anyway, he and a parent go off somewhere, and like his voice is half an octave lower, and like he's got wrinkles around his eyes, and good, that's an exaggeration.
Yeah.
But he's noticeably older.
Yeah,
like, he's not a little kid anymore. Yeah. The Sean Patrick Flannery wasn't as noticeable because he was already too old. Not too old. But he was already, you know, he was supposed to be playing like 18 to 21, and he was probably 25 to 30. So he was already like, okay, you're TV 18, you're not real 18. So that was a little less noticeable.
And it's honestly something that used to happen a long time ago in TV shows and movies a lot. You know, they'd get somebody who was in their 30s or 40s even to play somebody that was a teenager, and you'd go, wait, don't you have, like, grown kids at home? you know,
we always think that kids look younger today.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing is that the guy that plays Indy's father, that plays Henry Jones Sr., was only about 10 years older than Sean Patrick Flannery. I actually, you know, I know I'm in the minority here. I actually think he does a fair job in the show. They never gave him great material, but you could definitely believe that this guy would become the Connery character from Last Crusade.
I mean, obviously part of the issue is that he's being compared to Cosby, too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And we'll get to the characters in a minute, but now that we've gotten through some of the production stuff, you know, to put all this in perspective, you know, let's start and ask, how did we first come to this? Me, I came to it when it was first airing. You know, I got excited for it. They had just released the Indiana Jones trilogy on newly remastered VHS, and they announced right then and there, and they put it into movie theaters, these big trailers, Young Indiana Jones Chronicles coming March, ABC, and it was like, oh, an Indiana Jones TV series, wow. So, you know, I was excited as a kid, so was everybody else. I mean, at the school I was at, that was all everybody, boys and girls, were talking about. You know, everybody wanted to see it. So, you know, it was a fairly big deal, at least before people actually saw what the fuck they were getting. So what about you?
I was like, I have been marginally like aware of it for some time and never really looked into it until fairly recently when we got serious about doing the Lucas and then this as a companion to Lucas. So it was like, okay, I guess it's time to sit down with this and see what it's about. It's largely forgotten, I would say, at this point. I personally would argue that that might be better for Indiana Jones's legacy. I know some people love it. You can count me out of that number, but it is what it is. Which is fairly harmless if standard early 90s television.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's kind of how I see it. I probably like it a bit more than you do, but, you know, I've also done something that some people probably would think is crazy. I have watched the entire Indiana Jones series in chronological order. So what I'll do is, and I've done this a couple of times now, maybe even three times, I've watched the Young Indiana Jones series. Then I will stop it, watch the beginning of Last Crusade sometimes. Usually I'll just skip to Last Crusade till later and then continue watching it so that you get that Young Indy stuff when he's like about 14 at the beginning of Last Crusade, then watch it all the way through, then Temple of Doom, Raiders, Crusade, and Crystal Skull. I've done that a few times. And, you know, watching it that way does change the way that you view Indy as a whole. Sometimes I view it better. Sometimes I'm like, yeah, I can see the cracks, but I still have fun with it. So, you know, here is the question we always ask, and that is, what, if any, themes are present in this series?
I'm fairly convinced that George Lucas was given a copy of Forrest Gump shortly before the production of The Last Crusade, and he's like, Indiana Jones needs to become Forrest Gump. Let's make this happen. The themes, there's tons, because it's seriously trying to tackle the entire first half of the 20th century. And doing, well, okay, not the first half, the first...
Yeah, the first 20 years.
The first third or so. So it deals with World War I. It deals with women's suffrage. It deals with the very, very, very early days of kind of a black movement in America. It's not quite Harlem Renaissance, but it's also definitely like pre-civil rights. I don't know what you would call it. So it just is about everything. And I do think that that might be part of the issue I have with it. But, you know, it is, again, what it is.
Yeah, no, I think that you know, you, if I'm catching you, you feel like its ambitions were there, but it didn't succeed, and that really frustrated and disappointed you, that you admire what it wanted to do, but it just didn't work. It never took the time to be serious enough or develop what it was going after. It ended up not following through
yes
in the way that you wanted.
I would say yes to that. I think that it also, like, tonally, like, I'm all for genre mixing. Anyone who listens to this show knows that. But I feel like it at times tried to have its cake and eat it too, and ended up like with the serious stuff not being serious enough and the funny stuff not being quite funny enough. And it just always ended up like never hitting the tonal marks that it wanted to hit.
Yeah,
which
and part
is
of
a
that
shame
is
because like the talent behind the and in front of the camera is there. Like,
yeah,
this
and
is
I was just
going to
say that. I mean, you know, you've got some great writers and directors. I mean, you know, you have David Hare, Mike Newell, Nicholas Rogue, Deepa Mehta. You know, you have
Thank
Billy
you,
August, Joe Johnson, Terry Jones, Vic Armstrong, Simon Windsor, Frank Darabont, you know, among many others, Matt Jacobs, Jonathan Hensley, you know, doing writing and directing on this show, Julie Selbo. But I think that not having Lucas and his right-hand guy at the time, McCallum, as involved as they could have been, you know, they basically let individual, you know, writing, directing teams do their own thing. I mean, a lot of it, you know, it's a story by George Lucas. The story was there, but the individual teleplays weren't. The individual directors, you know, there was no consistency. And that is why, as much as I have fun with the show, and I definitely like it more than you do, I've always thought that there was an inconsistency because, you know, you can get a terrific episode followed by a horrible episode. And it's
well, and
horrible
thing,
because it misunderstands everything about the character.
The other thing is, yes, George Lucas created the character of Indiana Jones. But Indiana Jones is so, and to not have his involvement at all, I think, is another area where it really suffers.
Yeah, and I do wonder if I've never been able to find out if Spielberg was even invited to come along.
Well, Amblin helped produce it, right? So, like, he was at least like tertiarily involved.
He was definitely somewhere in terms of you know,
financing or something.
You know, like a name somewhere, but in terms of actual involvement, I've never been able to find out if he actually was. All reports seem to indicate not really. I mean, he was more involved with Animaniacs and Tiny Toons and Pinky and the Brain. And he was, you know, this. I mean, hell, he was probably more involved just being a big cheese at WB Animation in the early 90s with Batman than he was this show.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, I was thinking, if there were themes, It might be learning and growth, inquisitiveness, tolerance, respecting education and knowledge. Now, whether or not these are things that are reflected properly in the show is another thing, and that's one of the things we can discuss, whether or not it actually worked or not. But I think those are some of the themes that the show has, and I was wondering what you were thinking.
I think that that's true. And I think that this might be an area where they did a disservice by showing it completely chronological, because it ends up making it look like Indy never learned a lesson. It's kind of Seinfeld that way. Like, he learns his lesson in this episode, and like two episodes later, he's doing the exact same thing. Whereas, if you're watching a young, like an 11-year-old and then an 18-year-old, and you're like, oh, look, he learned his lesson and took it with him. But when you're watching young, you're like, okay, you're just doing the same crap over and over again.
Yeah, and those 10 or 11 episodes of very young Indy, it's not that Corey Carrier is bad. It's just that those episodes are so weak compared to what comes before, and it's such a different Indy. Yeah, he's a kid, but he's also not at all what we would expect as he begins. I mean, they have this wonderful opening where we see that he's a mischievous boy and everything, and we can kind of say, yeah, okay, you know, we can see how this would become Indy. But, you know, he's a little bit of a punk, frankly.
Definitely is. It's more than precociousness. It's like, definitely crosses the line into he's a little asshole sometimes.
Yeah. So, you know, I was going to say, well, we can get back to that, because I think these next few questions will help us answer this as we head towards the end, because I don't think this episode is going to go more than about an hour. And that is, what is the strongest aspect of this series? You know, we talked about some of the weakest aspects of the series. What is the strongest aspect for you of this series?
The production values.
Yeah.
It is incredibly well produced. Costume design, the production design, the period details, even like the ambition. I think the ambition is there too. Like, this was an expensive show. What was like $1.5 million an episode in 1992?
Yeah, it was something like between $1.5 to $2 million an episode. I mean, ABC sunk a shit ton of money into it. They needed it to be a massive hit. They needed it to have like 25 million viewers a week, and it didn't.
They were shooting on location, and like, hats off to like the production of this show and to the ambition of it. I will give credit there, and credit is 100% due there.
Yeah, no. We're in agreement there. That's exactly what I was gonna say. And I do think that it was that. We'll get to that in a minute. So, what is the single weakest part of the show? What is the show's fatal flaw for you?
You
kind of covered that, but if you can put it very
simply. It's that tonal, the inability to hit the tonal notes. it feels heavy-handed at times when it's supposed to feel dramatic. It feels like either a cheap laugh or just kind of a cringe almost when it's supposed to be funny. I don't know. I guess it has to come down to the writing and probably just the fact that I don't think Lucas probably gave them enough direction within the Bible that he gave them to hit those shifts in tone and mood the way that they really needed to really actually make it work.
Yeah. I would have to agree. What is your favorite episode? What was your favorite episode of the series?
Let me pull up the title because the title's in the London, May 1916, which is about the women's suffrage movement at the brink of World War I. Elizabeth Hurley plays a suffragette with whom Indy falls in love with and is really kind of that the one that got away, that traumatic love loss that creates Indy's lovelorn persona through the films. To me, if that episode had been distilled and spread out through the entire series, it could have been a masterpiece.
Yep. Now, you know, that's one of the ones that has a bookend that I love that got taken away. Indy is talking to somebody.
That's one of the bookends I did see.
So you know why I love it.
Quite a bit of pathos.
You saw who they had as the
actress.
I mean, my God, they got her. They got Joan Plowright. What the fuck? And it was a young Elizabeth Hurley, let's not forget, that was playing that character.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great
one. She was
so
young, too.
But, you know, I have a few. I really do have a tie. I really love the episode, The Phantom Train, Phantom Train of Doom, where it's him with the old spies in Africa, and they're after the train that they can't find, that's got the big gun, and then there's the German colonel that they capture. You know, that's silly stuff, but I actually really had a lot of fun with it. I also really did like The Mystery of the Blues, but it wasn't the gangster stuff, which was kind of silly. It was the stuff with Sidney Bechet, but it was also Jeffrey Wright as Sidney Bechet. So, you know, you have one of the great actors
Jeffrey
of the last 35, 40 years.
Jeffrey Wright was amazing.
You know, but, yeah, those two, plus the one you mentioned, you know, there are individual moments and things. Like, I think some of, you know, I mean, some of the other episodes, they have their moments, but that's basically what this show is. It's a lot of great moments, some really good episodes, and a lot of meh. And yet, you know, I have fun with it. Part of that may be because I grew up with it. You know, there's some nostalgia at play, but I do enjoy it. Let's see. On three, we're going to name our least favorite episode, and it's going to be what happened in it. One, two, three, Indy meets vampires.
Dracula.
Yep. Jesus Christ. What in the name of fuck were they thinking? Seriously, what were they thinking? The special effects are terrible. The actor was horrible, and he's not a bad actor. I've seen him in other things, and he was horrible there. The makeup was shit. The script was non-existent, and the director didn't know what the hell they were doing, and that's the director that should know what they were doing because they've done good stuff.
I can't think of many episodes, anything that I've seen that are worse than that. Like, it is amongst the garbage pail of television.
Narrative
television.
Well, you know, I was actually very curious when I saw that they were actually going to finally release it, because it was apparently the episode that Rick McCallum and George Lucas looked at the show and went, oh my God, I can't believe we actually produced this. They eventually released it because
they outlined for it.
I know. And here's the thing. They eventually released it. But no amount of tinkering is going to help. That is a bad episode. I'm totally with you. That is one of the worst things I've ever seen on television, or that came from television. I never watched the show, but I'm pretty sure there are episodes of The Jersey Shore that are better than that, or Real Housewives. It's pretty fucking sad. The average acting in an episode of Passions was probably better than what we got here. This was fucking sick. Sick in a bad way.
And I watched the entire episode. Like, I was so mad.
You kept texting me,
every 5 minutes.
Yeah, like every 5 minutes you texted me and you were like, this is terrible, this is horrible, why am I watching this, oh my God. And I was like, sorry man, it's the pain of having to watch it. I suffered, you can suffer too, because what can I say. It's some shit, because part of why I had you watch it instead of saying don't is because I wanted to have a chance to trash it like this, because I fucking hate that episode. Take that episode out, and the show immediately becomes a better show without that. I like to pretend that never fucking happened. I like to pretend it never fucking happened. I really, really did. Or do. Now, we want to discuss one other thing for sure here, and that is, did this series really help or hinder the character of Indiana Jones? And you said you think it kind of hinders him. I'm not sure. I used to think it really helped. I just think it kind of is. You know, there's actually a reference in to Indy's time with Zapata from the very first from the original pilot, because the original pilot was called The Curse of the Jackal, and it had Indy as a young kid and then Indy as a teenager, and it was this story about him meeting T.H. Lawrence seeing a friend get killed over an artifact, and then as a teenager ending up with Zapata's army and discovering the person that had killed his friend and recovering the artifact before heading off to the war. And that was the setup. They set it up that way so you would see the two sides, Kid Indy and Teen Indy. I think that really was a better setup. But what do you think?
I can call it either way. Like, the fact of the matter is that none of the material for me with Corey Carrier's Indiana Jones worked for me at all.
I will say that very little of it works for me, because what should have worked, like the stuff with Pacini, they make his mother unlikable, which to that point she hadn't
right.
been. And they make Indy weak and petulant, and then this is another problem where we're like, wait, what's going on here? Why is this happening? And I mean, this is an episode that Mike Newell directed. Mike Newell, there's no excuse for Mike Newell work to be that inconsistent. I mean, I'm sorry. There just isn't. But you know, before we get into the last bit, because I don't want to end the show on this. I want to have a chance to go forward and talk. I figure we'd take about 45 minutes here, but it looks like it's actually going to take an hour, which is surprising. I do want to say that we're going to do housekeeping now. And the housekeeping we're going to do is telling what's coming up on Blog Talk Radio. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls and all other people, we, however you choose to identify, coming up on Blog Talk Radio, we have Down the Rabbit Hole with Rachel, April Fool's Anti-Valentine Love Music Mix. That is coming up tomorrow at 2 p.m. Then on Sunday the 2nd at 8 p.m., Rock This Town Radio with TC, Beantown Rocks. On the 6th, we will have an episode with Carl, welcoming New York City Sci-Fi Film Festival Award recipient Danny Ashkenazi. That will be at 4 p.m. on the 6th of April. On the 9th of April at 8 p.m., Rock This Town Radio, The Father, the Son, and Chocolate Bunny Turds. Wonder what that could be. On the 16th, Rock This Town Radio with TC, the second annual 420 Big Show. That is at 8 p.m. on the 16th. Now, this show, Cathode Ray Mission, will be back on the 14th of April with an episode looking at the films of director Jane Campion. We will then be back the following week, April 21st, for a look at the film, at the TV series The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr., a one-season wonder, and I mean that in a good way, that ran on Fox just before The X-Files took off. We'll talk about that when we get to that episode. So now back to Briscoe, and we do hope you will join us for those episodes because there's lots of goodness coming in April, lots and lots. So now back to Indiana Jones. You know, one thing that we haven't talked about are the characters, and I think that's actually part of the problem with the show, because it is so very episodic. You know, you have Miss Seymour, his governess. You have his friend, Remy. You have his mother and his father. And then you have Indy himself. But do we ever really think about many of these characters beyond, you know, just maybe remembering a moment here or there? You know, I think Remy maybe a little bit, his father maybe a little with Miss Seymour, but unfortunately his mother, who should have been very important, is almost totally forgettable, and that's a shame.
You mentioned her becoming dislikable in the Puccini episode, and it's really tragic because that's really where she should have become.
Yeah.
All of a sudden there's a little bit of intrigue to this character, but instead of letting it just be interesting, there truly were moral judgments that were happening, and they truly did change her kind of character to fit the storyline. And I get that, yes, it's being shown through young Indy's eyes, and he's the one passing the judgment. But, like, she went from being a non-factor to the villain of the show, when really she should, like, that should have been her moment where she was kind of escaping the shadow of his father, which frankly is quite oppressive.
And I
know, like, they tried to kind of redeem it with the things that Miss Seymour says at the end of the episode. They didn't know what to do with the episode, and they dropped the ball.
And you have
some
to
of the
wonder
most
if,
memorable characters. What's that?
Go on.
Some of the most memorable characters in the show, frankly, are one-off characters that probably should have been in a few more episodes than they were.
Yeah, like, frankly, any of, I mean, the episode is, there's some really uncomfortable comedy bits, but the Terry Jones episode with, you know, where it's set in Barcelona and you have all the spies, including, Timothy Spall. You know, that crew, any of those characters, the Selwes character played by the guy that had played Belloc in Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, we see him twice, and he may be the best recurring character. I mean, sorry, Remy. but, you know, some people have said the show failed because it didn't feel enough like indie, but I've always said that wasn't really the problem, because this is about how indie became indie, and we get to see how he learned to, you know, adapt to other cultures and learn languages and the importance of blending in and getting along and how he got to know everybody, because it seems in the movies, fuck, he knows somebody everywhere. How does he do this? Well, we get to see that, and he seemed to, you know, you're like, how does an archaeologist, you know how to handle a gun and, you know, do this and do that? It's like he's some sort of a spy. Well, that's because he literally fucking was a spy. You know, and again, that's another call-out, you know, callback to that Crystal Skull has. Crystal Skull has Indy being a spy, and I know a lot of people are like, since when was Indy a spy? And I'm like, well, since when wasn't he? You know, because it was established in the series. You know, there's a lot that went right, and there's a lot that went wrong. God, I lost my train of thought. So, do you have any thoughts on the characters, other than, you know, the mother kind of not... Oh, I know where I was going. Sorry. I was going to say, you know, I think that part of the problem with the show is they had many scripts at various stages of development, some that were just an idea, some that were just a bare summary of what would have happened, and some that were pretty much finished, that we never got to see made. One that was interesting to me was a 5-year-old indie where we find out where he meets Paul Robeson. Another one would have been a 2-parter where we see his mother die. Another one where he was young and he met Abner Ravenwood, Marion's father. There were going to be episodes in the war that would have connected things, and a lot of stuff after the war, including where he would have met Belloc, and we would have begun to see the rivalry with Belloc. And, you know, the idea was that they were going to take Indy through till about 1926 or 27. So there would have been several time jumps, and eventually it would have been Indy as a, you know, an older guy. And I think that's actually part of why, come to think of it, that might have been part of why they didn't mind casting a slightly older actor as Indy, because the idea is that in a few years he would have been playing an older Indy. Have you read any of those scripts or summaries? Have you heard any of this, or is this the first you've ever heard of some of this?
I was aware that there were some of these tie-ins and stuff. Like, wasn't Eye of the Peacock, which is produced, but isn't there supposed to be another story that leads directly into Temple of Doom, basically?
Because that diamond was the eye of the peacock, and there would have been one that would have shown us that the diamond in Temple of Doom is the same as the one in Peacock. Yep.
Okay. That was, I know, the big one that kind of they were really bummed that they didn't get to make. Lucas.
And there was one that Lucas was really pissed they didn't get to make either, and this was years before Crystal Skull. It would have been an episode where Belloc stole a Crystal Skull.
Yeah. He was getting really fascinated by that idea.
It's weird. It's weird stuff. There's so much wasted potential, and yet I still had fun with it. And you know, there was a comic book series that was basically an adaptation of episodes. There were books, some of them okay, a lot of them terrible. There was a video game that was pretty fucking terrible. It was a little media franchise for a year or two there. And unfortunately, it just didn't work out. But, I think on balance, it's a fun show, if flawed. So what do you think?
I, frankly, don't care for it. They just never did anything that really got me. I saw Forrest Gump, and it was only 2.5 hours instead of 27. I had this line prepared. Crystal Skull used to be my least favorite Indiana Jones movie because it had the worst scene in all of the movies combined. Now it's my least favorite because it made a young Indiana Jones canon.
Well, you know, to each their own.
It just never really worked for me. And I get why it does work for some. And I'm willing to concede this wholesale. I saw this show, which was intended for children and young adults, as a full-grown man. There is zero nostalgia for me. I may have just missed it, and I am willing to wholesale concede that. It's not something that I'm going to, make fun of for people for liking or question anyone's taste. It's just, it never really took off for me.
Yeah, you know, and I think that part of that, and I'm going to admit this, is there are moments in the show where, you know, if you're a kid or a young adult, even if you're somebody familiar with history, let's not forget this was the early 90s and scholarship has changed. There are some depictions of characters in history, of people in history, that are presented as more admirable than we now think of them. Particularly Woodrow Wilson, which while they do present Wilson, you know, wasn't good with Ho Chi Minh. They don't go into that enough. Now, some of this may be because it was a 1990s ABC TV series. Honestly, had it been on daytime TV at that time, on ABC was much more daring than their primetime offerings. ABC wasn't going to be daring again until a year or two later when they had NYPD Blue.
They used up all their daring on Twin Peaks.
And it bit them in the ass in terms of ratings.
Right,
and,
exactly.
And as we discussed 2 weeks ago,
don't blame them.
Are we ever going to really see anything truly daring from George Lucas? I mean, ambitious,
right.
Yes. Daring, I'm not sure. But, you know,
I don't
this
think
is
it's
his,
in him.
Yeah,
I don't.
Show. Go on.
I just don't think it's in him. Like, I think that, like, he has his obsessions and he has his interests, and they're, you know, small-town California boy interests, and that's fine. Like, he is gracious with some wonderful stuff. But that I don't think daring is necessarily in any of those things that interest him.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, like I said, there's some good stuff, but there's also some really bad stuff. But I think ultimately it is a show that I don't know if today's kids would like the show. I think kids maybe 20 years ago may have. Kids 30 years ago absolutely did. But would kids today like it? No, I think it really is one of those weirdly it's one of those weirdly
of, the
of a time. Yeah, yeah, you know, it's not something like, say, the Mod Squad, where it's so 60s it hurts, and that's why nobody watches it anymore. This is just one of those shows that was so 90s that I think you had to be there to really get it. And if you weren't there, you probably won't ever be able to appreciate it. As you grow up, you're going to be able to look back on it and reflect and go, yeah, but that's just how it is.
I was reflecting on a lot of that, too. Like, even like the Paul Robeson stuff, who this really remarkable black leader through the early 20th century, pre-civil rights. And they were kind of doing the 90s colorblind stuff with it. And it's like, you guys are missing the point here. Like, coexisting and colorblindness are not the same thing. And it was noble for its time, but it kind of misses the mark now.
Yeah. And I think we needed to go through that period to get to the conversations we're having now.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But, you know, but it, like I said, do I think it's a great show? No. Do I think it's a good enough show? In some ways. I will not call it a bad series. You know, it was once upon a time in my top 100. It no longer is. You know, if I have to be absolutely critical with it, it's out. But I do still have fun with it. The DVDs are sitting here. I probably will sit and revisit it again, maybe not this summer, but next summer, because I watched it about 2 years ago, so it's going to come time in about, because like I said, about every 3-4 years, I sit down and watch all of Indiana Jones again. That's just what I do. But yeah, so, you know, we thought we'd bring this in between 30 to 50 minutes, and it went a little bit longer, and that's fine, but we're finally going to have one of these episodes come in under an hour. So I want to say thank you for coming in and talking about this with me. You know, this is fun. Some of these two-handers are really good to have, and I hope everybody out there had fun listening to us argue the merits of this show. And if you haven't seen it, you know, try to watch it yourself. It is available to watch. It is on streaming. But be warned that the Mystery of the Blues episode is not available for streaming except on YouTube. You'll have to go there to watch it, or you'll have to pick up the DVD sets. You can purchase it on iTunes and Amazon, but it's still missing Mystery of the Blues, which is fucking weird. But that's also the episode that has Harrison Ford in the one and only bookend they've kept. Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones. Yeah, so with that, I will wish you all a good night. and hope you guys all and gals and everybody else will join us in 2 weeks for Jane Campion. So 1, 2, 3, good night.
Good night.